This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a celebration of a unique outdoor art installation, a dramatic theater event, or an intimate evening of chamber music, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. It's colossal and guaranteed to turn heads. Next week, St. Campus, a giant seahorse installation, becomes the newest addition to the Poydras Quarter sculpture exhibition presented by the Hellas Foundation. The installation by emerging artist Ashley Pridmore celebrates International Sculpture Day. Ashley joins us now. Welcome.
Hi.
This must be quite an honor as you are joining a couple dozen iconic artists whose works are featured along the Poydras Quarter. How was your sculpture selected for this rotating exhibit?
A few years ago, I met Michael Mangeris at a party at the Ogden Museum, and Michael happens to be the curator for this rotating exhibit on the Poydras Corridor. Unbeknownst to me in conversation, he let me know that he knew my work and liked it and asked me if I was interested in possibly putting a piece up on Poydras, which I was very much. And so I dogged him until it happened.
And here we are today.
Here we are.
So introduce us to St. Campos. Let's start with the name. Does this go back to Greek mythology?
Yeah, it does. Hippocampus is the genus for seahorse. And hippo is from ancient Greek meaning horse. And campos means sea monster. The work I make generally is assemblage work or based on assemblage work. So I'll take found natural objects and put them together in ways they wouldn't necessarily exist in nature, or I will recreate them in papier-mâché or metals. So I have a series of work that I make, small seahorses with things adhered to them, like the leaves from a staghorn fern, for example, or porcupine quills or crabapple thorns. When I was looking through my work for inspiration for this larger project, I decided to make a sea beast, sea creature, sea monster based on one of these smaller assemblage pieces.
Now, the work is skeletal in nature?
It is. One of my favorite museums to go to is the Museum of Natural History. I love going and seeing all of the skeletons articulated and recreated. There's something about that repetition of form that really speaks to me. So at the time when I was figuring out what I would make for this project, I was also reading the travel journals of Alexander von Humboldt, thinking a lot about his predecessors and cartography and the monsters that are drawn on maps that kind of signify the unknown, what could be lurking in the depths, maybe. And I wondered, what if one of these monsters had, you know, proved itself to be real, perhaps? Or what would it look like if the hippocampi had washed up on the shore? What would its skeletal structure be? How would it swim?
So how big is this piece?
This piece stands about 8 feet high.
Whoa.
It's big. It's cast bronze and a bit of stainless steel, but mostly cast bronze.
And how long have you been working at this?
I started the physical labor on this piece in early May. So I've been working on it nearly a year. Yeah.
So what are you exploring with the piece?
I'm thinking about those early monsters. I'm thinking about the structure of them, but I'm also thinking about their purpose. I feel like they were drawn with maybe the idea that the unknown could be malevolent or that they were evocative of something malevolent. But what if they were benevolent? What if this sea beast was here in New Orleans to help, you know, control the waters of the mighty Mississippi, the creature that that is? Maybe the horse that draws Poseidon's chariot could come and tame the waters that it was born in.
Wow. That's a pretty nice gift to the city of New Orleans.
Hopefully it works.
Ashley, tell us about yourself. You're a native New Yorker, but you've been in New Orleans a while?
Yeah, I grew up in upstate New York, actually. I grew up in the Finger Lakes region. It's absolutely gorgeous there. I spent my childhood out in nature, kind of running around in creeks and streams. And then I lived for a decade in New York City. I've been coming down to New Orleans for nearly a decade, actually. I was a personal assistant for another artist who shows here, and I would travel with him here. That was my first introduction to New Orleans and Louisiana. And I immediately fell in love with it and began coming on my own as well. So I've had this sort of back and forth love affair with New Orleans for 7 or 8 years now.
And on Tuesday, April 24th, St. Campos will be installed on the Portress Quarter. And I hear the sculpture has attracted the attention of the nautically themed crew of Colossus.
Yes.
What can we look forward to as your piece is installed?
I believe there's going to be a lead-in parade by the crew of Colossus, which has sea creature themed bicycles.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so that should be fun. I've never installed a work of this size, so your experience will be as fresh as mine on this.
Artist Ashley Brittmore, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Ashley Brittmore's giant skeletal seahorse sculpture, St. Campos, will be installed Tuesday morning, April 24th at 10:30 on Poitras Street between St. Charles Avenue and Camp Street. An award-winning play by Black Panther star Danai Gurira opens this week as Southern Rep Theater presents the regional premiere of Eclipsed. It's a story of survival by women captives during the Second Liberian Civil War. Southern Rep Artistic Director Aimee Hayes and Director Malika Oyetemin are here. Welcome.
Thanks.
This is a work that has been garnering attention as it travels around the country. Tell me, let's begin with you, Aimee. How were you first attracted to it?
I saw the play in its run at the Public Theater and was deeply moved by the play because I thought it really managed a terrifically challenging subject with humor and passion and love. Also, I think Danai is an incredible playwright and have seen some of her other work and read some of her other plays. And it had been a question of which one would make the most sense for New Orleans audiences and for Southern Rep audiences.
And Malika?
I'm just drawn to how richly the women are portrayed. They're disparate women from disparate backgrounds, and it really shows up in the play, the love in the play. Those are the things that kind of drew me in.
Let's set the stage. It's a work told through the eyes of women. Who are they, and what is their journey?
It's five women, and four of them are rather young women, and then one is in her 40s. But the other women are 15, 20, 19, and really what we're doing is watching how five different women survive the unimaginable in war-torn Liberia. And what we watch is a play, for the first time that I've ever seen, about war told from the perspective of women, specifically from women. There are no men in this play that are visible.
Who are these women?
These are women from Liberia, from different parts of the country, Monrovia, the bush, different villages that they were stolen from. And we can use words like captives, sex slaves, soldiers. There's a woman who is from the Liberian Army for Peace, and those are the women who helped basically end the war. So these are women from all over the country, and they are thrown together because of this atrocity.
I have been very drawn to Liberia's experience because of how women really ended that war and also shaped its recovery post-war. It's fascinating to me that the women working together were able to change the course of this country's very violent dynamic. That, to me, I think resonates in the play that Danai puts together here. It's about the resilience of women, the choices that you have to make, the choices that you want to make, and how do you support other women in that situation?
And the choices are not many.
No, they aren't.
It's so interesting because they aren't many, but they are. They're nuanced in a way of what is important to you? What was important to you before the war? So if morality was important to you and a core foundation before the war, is that what you're trying to make survive? If love was important to you, if education was important to you, when we think of survival, we have to think about what is the thing that you need to continue to live for you to be able to live. So we watch these women and seemingly they have no choice, but we actively watch how they keep themselves not only just alive, but keep their mind engaged, keep their body engaged, try to keep their soul engaged. The desperate way that these women pray is not unlike a single mom who's got five kids and just lost her job. Survival is survival is survival, and we make the most out of nothing every day. I had somebody ask me, why would we want to go see this play full of sorrow and sadness? And, you know, I understand that question. But like I said to him, the play opens in joy. The play opens with a laugh. There's a moment of tension. And then we begin to watch a 15-year-old African girl explain to two other Africans who've never seen the movie Coming to America some of the funniest scenes in Coming to America. We begin in joy.
Yeah.
Humor is an effective part of survival.
Absolutely. I think of some of the hardest times in my life by loved ones' beds in the hospital, and the nurses would come in and look at us like we were crazy because we would just be laughing because we have to.
The play is called Eclipsed. What's being eclipsed in this work?
The women's light, the light that makes us all shine the brightest. Their potential is being eclipsed. Who they could be is being eclipsed. And throughout the play, there's so many little heartbreaking moments where you get to see a glimpse of who these women could be if the war had not eclipsed them.
Let's talk a little bit about the playwright, Denai Gurira. What inspired her to write this play?
Her main inspiration, as I know it, is to tell stories of African women, to tell stories of African women on the continent and tell them in a three-dimensional, complex way, and specifically tell them for Western audiences. And she did a lot of interviews with Lured soldiers and peace workers. She was just really drawn into the work. She came across a picture of one of the Lured female soldiers, and she was in this like club top and bell bottom jeans holding an AK-47, and she was drawn to it and said, there's a story there, and then began to do her research and deeper dives.
So tell us about the cast members. Who's in the play?
The cast features an incredible group of actresses in town. We have Idella Johnson, Sarah Nansubuga, LaSharon Purvis, and Lauren E. Turner, and we're being joined by Valentina Imakai, who has come down from New York.
What would you say is going to be the one thing that will resonate with local audiences?
I think people are going to be asking themselves how they survive, the atrocities of life. And I think that we're going to naturally do the thing where we say, what would we do if we were in that situation? Hopefully, people will begin to think about the people in the photos that we see in war-torn countries. I hope that we look at them and we say, man, who could they have been if they weren't in those situations?
Malika Oyetemin, director of Eclipsed, and Southern Rep Artistic Director Aimé Hayes, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks, Diane.
Southern Rep Theater presents Denai Gurira's Eclipsed. Performances run April 18th through May 6th in Loyola University's Marquette Theater. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Musaica Chamber Ensemble closes its 12th season tonight with Music at Home, a tricentennial program featuring works by award-winning local composers Dave Anderson and Tucker Fuller, and a rarely performed Beethoven string quintet. Musaica president and violist Bruce Owen joins us with composer Tucker Fuller. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
What a wonderful way to say happy birthday to New Orleans.
Well, we at Musaica are really happy to give a present to the city. You know, this is the end of our 12th season. I can't believe we've played 12 years of concerts. We've done 12 world premieres. And that's one of our missions, to play new music. We just want to introduce music to the city of various instrumental combinations. We're so lucky to have so many fine musicians from the Louisiana Philharmonic and who teach at Loyola and Tulane and UNO. We can do such a huge variety of music that wouldn't get played anywhere else.
Tucker, your musical star continues to rise. You are well known for your commissioned works. 4 years ago, you premiered a work with Musaica, and you're back with a new piece, the world premiere of Ephemera, a string sextet. Tell us about your inspiration for this work.
Well, when I was asked to write the piece, it was basically in the dead of winter, and so I started thinking about the word ephemera, specifically of things that last for a short amount of time or things that are to be enjoyed for a short amount of time, and how that applies to our human relationships and thinking about it in the context that essentially everything is ephemera. And then thinking about abstractly ephemera as different textures, different things that kind of pop in and out, sort of like memory, and how to apply that to a texture of a string sextet.
What will we experience in this work?
Basically, interlocking rhythms, sort of producing sort of a composite sound, like a large composite sound that sounds familiar and almost sort of hints at melodies sort of coming out of this texture, but in the end, nothing really is popping out of it, though there is one sort of melodic gesture or phrase that kind of appears in different parts of the movement that ties it all together. It's a more internal piece, I think.
What instruments are involved?
It's two violins, two violas, one cello, and double bass.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. When did you know that music would be your calling?
There was music around the house all the time. I've been told I found classical music at a very young age, sort of hiding away and listening to all sorts of things on records and things like that.
Did you grow up in New Orleans?
I did not. I was born on a farm in North Dakota, actually.
How did you wind up in New Orleans?
I was born on a farm, sort of a cattle ranch, and then ended up moving to Minneapolis suburbs. From there, went to various schools up and down the East Coast, and then after finishing my doctorate at University of Michigan, I found myself in Chicago and sort of on the job market looking for an academic job during the recession. And my best friend lived in New Orleans, and she said, well, if none of those things necessarily pan out, you should just get on a train and come to New Orleans. And so I did that. And I've been here ever since.
And you've been here for how long now?
I've been here for, I guess, coming up on 8 years.
And the program is complemented by LPO bassist Dave Anderson's Sonata for Bass and Harp. Bruce, can you tell us what audiences can expect with this work?
Well, this is a piece that he wrote in 1993 before he was living in New Orleans. I think he knew in his soul he was going to be here. And this is a piece he actually wrote for himself and his wife, Kathy, also a member of Musaica. There are three movements, an allegro, an elegy, and then there's a rondo. He was inspired by the music of Ginastera, and especially Ginastera's harp concerto. In this piece, people will hear sounds that they might not be used to hearing normally from those instruments. It's a very touching piece.
And you're including a rarely performed work by Beethoven.
Right. This is a piece that I had not heard of when I was studying music. This particular quintet is the only string quintet that Beethoven wrote for this combination of instruments. He wrote it shortly after his Opus 18, six string quartets, but before the Moonlight Sonata. This particular combination of instruments is two violins, two violas, and cello. He maybe was influenced by Mozart's string quartet in C major that was written 15 years earlier. It definitely influenced Schubert to write his quintet in C major. The piece is nicknamed the Storm Quintet. There's some speculation that maybe that's because of the last movement that sounds really restless and agitated, and I think even kind of raucous. It's a really great piece, and I don't understand why it isn't performed very much. We're happy to perform music that was first performed in Beethoven's own hometown of Vienna.
Musaica violist and president Bruce Owen and award-winning New Orleans composer Tucker Fuller. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Musaica Chamber Ensemble performs tonight at 7:30 at St. Charles Avenue Presbyterian Church, 1545 State Street. The concert is free. Donations are suggested. And a reception will follow the performance where you can meet and greet the musicians. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.